You are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Coffee with Kim. I invite you to journey with me to a new day. I believe God has led you to this moment and this place because He is about to bring purpose and potential to your story. So join thousands of women and men from around the globe who have discovered how powerful their stories become once Christ touches them with His purpose. Don't you long to make this same discovery? Then grab your coffee, scoot in, and join me as we let God's Word reveal how every part of your past has been preparing you for this very moment.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Coffee, a place of real talk, conversations between friends to simply encourage and equip one another. Hello, my name again is Kim Crable, and I welcome you to today's broadcast as we continue our season's theme, Confronting and Conquering Our Day-to-Day Real-Life Issues and Struggles so that we all might live our best lives. Amidst a very busy and hectic schedule, I am so honored that Sage Steele has so graciously agreed to be our guest on today's broadcast. We all know Sage is that beautiful, brilliant, and confident superstar that she is. She's the co-host of SportsCenter, the televised evening show that you can see every afternoon at 6 p.m., and you've also seen her on various other primetime television. This is the professional Sage. Today, it's with great pleasure to introduce the behind the camera, behind the scenes, the personal Sage, the wife, the mom of three, the sister-in-law, the daughter, the aunt. Gosh, so many incredible titles and roles that she does so well. But today, a role that I'm so blessed to use as I introduce her to you, a friend, my friend, Sage. Hello, Sage. Welcome to Coffee. I'm so glad you're here.
Good morning, Miss Kim. It's good to hear your voice. I wish we were in person, but I'll take this.
I know. I do wish it was in person, but gosh, you've been so busy, and I love you. I love to hear your voice. I love to see what is going on in your life. I love just being a part of knowing, yes, the professional Sage, but also to have been able to get to know the personal Sage that, gosh, you stay so busy, it's really hard. Many people don't and can't see that roles, all these many roles that you play. But Sage, let's begin with the professional side of you today. You know, this season we've been talking about really finding the courage to conquer the things that are going on in our lives, to really face the issues that are coming at us. It would be so much easier just to run from or pretend like they're not there, but that definitely does not describe you. As I've gotten to know you, I've just been overwhelmed with the many challenges that you have faced, beginning as a little girl on up, you know, growing up through your career. Let's just begin with one. What would you say was the one issue that you had to confront early on to really become the Sage that other people know you to be right now?
I would say my shyness, which people don't really believe because now I talk too much at home, at work, everywhere. I would talk way too much. But, you know, it was just my personality. When I was young, I was the oldest with two younger brothers. My dad was in the military. A lot of people know that about me because I'm kind of loud and proud as far as being an Army brat and my family's, you know, commitment to service and being hopefully true patriots. But, you know, the moving, by the time I was 11 years old, we had lived in the United States plus three other countries. So that it was just constant change. And the thing is, I didn't know any different. And so I thought that was normal that everybody moved every year or so. But through that time, I just proved to be very, very, very shy, and which is why I think it's ironic that I'm doing what I'm doing for a living now. When there were times I would talk to my family members, you know, my parents, my brothers, and some aunts and uncles, and maybe a couple friends, but that was really it. So it still affects me, but I just know how to handle it. I know how to flip that switch and get through it. Although, you know, it's funny. I fake it a lot.
Yeah, you know, you're speaking to a lot of people right now because public speaking, you know, is one of the hardest, one of the number one, number two things that people have to overcome. And here you are on this incredible platform. And I've heard those stories of you being shy, but I've heard also that a lot of that shyness came from being bullied.
You know, that bullying part didn't take place until a little bit later, which was my senior year of high school. When we moved from Fort Carson, well, from Colorado Springs, Colorado, to Carmel, Indiana. Carmel's a suburb of Indianapolis.
Yes.
And it was something that was shocking to me and my family because, for those who don't know, the military is actually the most accepting place, I guess, of anywhere that I've ever experienced in this country, living all over. And it doesn't matter what you look like or what religion you are. I mean, I come from an interracial marriage. My mom is white, half Irish, half Italian. My dad's black. And there were a ton of interracial marriages and relationships, and it was just a beautiful thing. No one really looked at color. The cliche statement there, it's true.
Sure.
No one looked at color, how I grew up. And then I got to senior year of high school when we had to move to Indiana, and it was a very different situation with almost 2,000 students in that high school, and I was the only black student. Biracial, I'm very proud to make sure there's a difference because I want my mom represented just as much as my dad. But, you know, they saw me as one thing and they let me know that, and let me clarify, there were a ton of nice people there, a ton.
Yes.
But there were some bad ones, as there are everywhere, but these guys went particularly out of their way to let me know that I needed to, you know, go back to Africa and called me monkey and words that I will not say. But that was a turning point in my life for sure. It did change me. And many would say, oh, you're lucky that it didn't happen sooner. And I guess I am, because that's just not what the military is about. So I was late, I guess, as far as that is concerned. But it did change me. Up until then, I was just shy because I was shy. That changed things a little bit. And I had to challenge myself to come out of it.
You said, Sage, that you said that during that time it was a turning point. In what way? Because I know I have a friend right now who is dealing with some of the bullying, and I really didn't even know we were going to get on this issue, but I feel like it's something that really does need to be confronted, because there are ways to go through it and to come out on top, as you have. But, you know, but you do have to get to the crossroads where you decide what you're going to do. How was that a turning point with you? What was it? What did that create within you, maybe, that you didn't even know was there?
A couple of things. First of all, when it happened, what happened was I was walking to class one day, and this group of four or five boys kind of started walking behind me and ended up backing me into a corner and started spewing those words and kind of hatred. And the funny thing is, one of them was my friend, I thought. And so I just was so devastated by it. I remember I was on my way to my required home ec class, and I just remember sitting in that classroom and not crying. I didn't want anybody to see. I remember just scribbling angrily on my notebook and saying how much I hated it there. And you know, I got home and my dad was out of town. I told my mom, and of course, being a mother now of three, I can't imagine what I would have done had I one of my kids, you know, if they came home today telling me what I told my mom that day. And she was livid, obviously. And we called the school, and we set up a meeting, and we went in, and the principal let me tell my story. And then he said he didn't believe me. He said I was lying and that I made it all up. And so that was just shocking. I think it was shocking for my mother as well. Like, what are you talking about? And I was this quiet kid and this good student. And then when a person in authority calls you a liar for something that's hard to talk about, even, I my mom had to kind of drag me in there to tell the story. And that hurt. So I kind of went into a little bit of a hole. And of course still had to see those boys every day. And then one day I was walking through the halls and a teacher pulled me aside. Her name was Agnes Cam. I don't know if she's still there. It's been almost 30 years. For her sake, I hope she's not there anymore. But she's a German teacher. I didn't take German. I didn't even know she knew who I was. When I think about it, I'm like, well, obviously she knew who I was. I was the only one who looked like that in the whole school. And then apparently word got out of what had happened, and she pulled me aside, and she said, "Let me tell you something. I heard what happened, and please know this: you are doing more for this school than we could ever do for you. Don't you let them affect you." And that was in my senior year was 1989, 1990, and now it's 2018. And I remember her name. I remember her face when she said it. And I remember thinking, she's so right. I can't let them affect me. And I literally use that to this day for other situations where people are going to do things and say things, mean, true, untrue, try to bring you down, whatever, frustrating bosses at work. I mean, trust me, I'm in deep right now with some of that stuff. And but I keep telling myself, as much as it's disappointing at times that people do things or say things, we can't control that. What I can control is how I handle it. And if I allow them to bring me down, to affect my happiness, to affect anything in my life, well, then that's on me. It's not even on them. It's on me. So I go back to being and I was young. I turned 17 during my senior year, that one year I was at that school. And I go back, and I'm so thankful that she pulled me aside and said that when she didn't have to. She could have just thought, oh, this poor kid, and, you know, let's pray for her. Maybe she did. Maybe she didn't. But what she did do is she pulled me aside, and she told me that. And now that I'm, you know, much, much older, I so appreciate that because I've been able to draw strength from it and use it throughout my life.
Sage, what was her name again?
Ms. Cam, K-A-M. She was a German teacher at Carmel High School in 89-90. Yeah, I just love her to death.
You know,
I actually let her try to look for her on Facebook, and I couldn't find her, so I don't know.
Isn't it amazing that, you know, what you just described as our listeners are hearing this story, you know, I want to impress upon and remember myself and to speak this into our listeners is that what you just described is something that we each can do every day. We each have a voice that we can speak life and promise and potential into people. And there you were, a 16-year-old on a 17-year-old, but you were still so vulnerable in your world and trying to be, you know, that could have affected the course of the rest of your life. You know, she really, that's amazing. I love that. I've never heard that story. And Sage, it makes me think of a quote that I had written up for today. Listen to this. Life is hard and it isn't fair. And it really hurts sometimes. But if you can focus on what is within you and your power to change for the better, then you can and you will. I saw that quote and I thought, boy, that is a Sage Steele quote. That is a picture of who you are, not even knowing that you were going to share that story. And what I love is I feel like, and you can give me your thoughts, but I feel like that we are living in a world where every day we are honoring those who feel victimized more and more, and it's giving us excuses for not being successful or not, you know, challenging what's before us because it's so much easier just to feel like a victim. But what you've said is, no, it's on me to pick up my life. And to me, that is the courage and the confidence that we need spoken into our world today.
I agree. And it doesn't mean that the people who do or say those nasty things, whether it be back in 89 at my high school, whether it be in the media now, on social media, you know, your neighbor, politicians, whatever, it doesn't mean that they should, you know, get off scot-free, so to speak, because that's shame on them.
Right.
My mother has been harping on me forever to, you know, worry about what you can control. And for years, I have just tried and tried and tried to fix things and to say, even if it's something on social media where I've been through the ringer on that, you know, well, no, this is what I – this is what I meant to say. This is what I did say. Why are you mad at me? Maybe if I tell them what I was trying to say or what really happened, then they'll like me,
right.
And then they'll forgive me, and then they'll say, and it's exhausting. And it's one of the things I'm most proud of over the last 2 years, through a lot of ups and downs and moves and job changes within the same company, of course. But I have finally let go. Probably about 90%. I need to get to 100, but I've let go of trying to control what others think of me, trying to please, and most importantly, I've let go of the fact. I've accepted the fact that not everybody's going to like me, no matter how hard I try, no matter how nice I might be, genuinely, no matter what, they're just not going to like me. Maybe the reasons are legitimate. Quite often, I found that they're not. And it used to just kill me. But again, I don't have time in my life for the people that I love, much less the ones I don't love. So am I going to waste energy on that and social media and even friends who, quote-unquote friends, you know, who are coming at you for different – I don't have the time. And that is where it's on me. And I can't point fingers at other people if I'm not willing to look at myself and say, wait a minute, wait. I'm struggling to balance everything anyway. And I'm going to be sitting here fighting with somebody on social media or fighting back and forth with a coworker or a boss. No, let go. Pick your battles, which my parents have also just begged me to do better. And I'm really finally doing it. I think that's one of the few beauties of getting old, is that you just say, I can't do it. I don't care. And I don't know, I'll be 46 this month, and I've never been stronger. So that's why I don't regret what happened at that high school. I'm not angry. I was, but then you grow up and you mature and you say, see, what if that hadn't happened? I wouldn't have been able to use what Ms. Cam said to me for all those years in other situations to gain strength.
And that's when you know life has turned around. When you get to the point to where you can look back without bitterness and anger and you go, if that had not happened, I would not be where I am today. But, Sage, you also have to work through it. You have to confront it like you did. You have to sit somewhere like you did in quietness, and you have to own it and decide how you can turn that to your good. How do we grow from this? What is the lesson in this? And that's what I've seen you do since I've known you, and the stories and the things, because you are one who wants to make a change. You don't want to just settle for status quo. And of course, those who are out there trying to defend our military, stand up for different people, of course you're going to rattle 50% of the people, as your brother has told me so many times, because he's in marketing. If you say something about one group, just know that there's 50% of the audience that are going to vote against you. But you don't let that rattle you, because you believe the causes that you step into are things that you really believe. And that's what I love about you, because you throw yourself into it with your whole heart and soul. And I love that you do it in a way that you don't feel victimized. You stand up to it and say, okay, it's almost like adult to adult, or whatever it is. What can we do to make this better? How do we work through it? And I don't know. I just feel like that's why I felt led to do this series on, you know, truly confronting those things, so that we don't look back one day with regret, thinking, I wish I had, especially for the sake of our future generation, you know, because you're fighting as we move more into your behind the scenes, your personal side, because you are a mom, your wife, and I know your husband really well and love him, but you've got three beautiful kids that you are also trying to affect this world in a good way for. So let's move into that a little bit, Sage, and let me remind our callers, we are taking calls today if we have time. The number is 347-324-5246. You will enter into a virtual green room. If you'd like to speak to Sage or if you have a question, press 1 and we'll be notified and we will bring you right on air. So, Sage, let's
get in. Ms. Kim,
can I say
one thing real quick?
Yes, of course.
Real quick, just as we transition in, because the public, the work side, one of the things I have learned the last 2 years that I am speaking to my kids about. So as you transition to the personal side, I think it applies. But I have been out there with a couple of things, and just whenever I speak about something or post something that might be viewed as controversial social media wise, it's based on an experience, which is why I laugh when people tell me I'm wrong. I'm like, well, no, this actually happened, so it's not really an opinion. From there, what I say might be, but here's my thing. We all have, there's so many differences. We're all so different. And what I truly believe is that we have to embrace that and embrace the D word, that diversity word, is one of those words right now that I think is overused and it's almost, I don't even know I don't think it truly lives up to what it could be, should be, because of how people take it out of context and then how the hypocrisy swirls around it. But my thing is this, if we truly want to get to where we are, where we want to be in a society, in this country, we have to be truly accepting of everyone's differences, not just the ones that we agree with. And as I have a daughter now who's in, I have three kids, as you know, but my oldest just switched schools, and she's at a wonderful school, but it's very, very one-sided with the line of thinking for many, many things. And she, on her own, as my parents did with me, thinks differently about things. She has developed these opinions on her own. And I've told her, it's okay. You give your opinion, even if it might be different from the other girls in the room. It's an all-girls school, or teachers in the room, and it's okay, because if everyone truly believes in diversity and acceptance, that means diversity, not just our skin color, not just our religion, not just our gender, anything.
Political
it
views.
Is diversity, yes, especially. It is diversity of thought. And that is something I keep telling her. That is when you know people are truly accepting. And that's what I will continue to fight for, not to stir the pot, not to start it, brought to my attention, or if it's directed at me, I will no longer sit back and really take it, because there's too many people who don't have a voice, who are being attacked for thinking a little bit differently. And so I keep trying to preach to them, and they have felt it. Through my experiences, they read social media, they see it, and I haven't hidden it from them, because I want them to see that, hey, life is really good, and there's some cool things about your mom's job, but there's some other sides too, that this is the other reality, and so you need to know that this is what the real world is like right now, and they're old enough at 16, 14, and 12 to see that and to know it, and I will never give up with them. And myself, but with them in particular, to say, you stand up for what you believe in a kind, accepting way, and that's how we'll truly know that this country has evolved to being really accepting, not just accepting of those that you agree with, not just what is convenient for you.
Sage, I'm telling you, you're so amazing, and thank you so much for adding that, because, you know, that is the meat of everything that I wanted this show to be about, because I know that that's who you are and what you really believe. And if all of us could get to the point where we are allowing our children, our teens, ourselves to share our own stories. And I love what you said, because that's what I believe is most important, is when you're sharing your story, what you've been through, no one can negate that. It's not an opinion. It's, no, I lived through this. And it's spoken with such passion, right? No one can negate what you've been through. When you've been through the hurt or the pain or being ostracized or gossiped about or whatever it is, or even having someone speak life into you like Miss Cam did, whatever it is that comes into your life, if we are freed, if we're given the permission, and that's what you're raising your children to be, you know, and I'm hearing so many parents that say, I just tell my kids just to be quiet, just to be quiet. Well, that's silencing their voice. That's silencing their to me, it's silencing their passion. I always tried to raise my boys to, like with you, it's like, use your voice, use it kindly like you do with yours, use it compassionately, but do it courageously. Because there's so many people, that's leadership. That's allowing your children to know that their lives matter, that they're born with a plan and a purpose, and it's okay you know, to find your place, your platform, and to use that, because there's so many that were not equipped with parents who said it's okay. So like you said, there has to be those leaders that rise up that can take a stand. Otherwise, where in this world is this world going to, right?
It scares me, I hope I'm beginning it soon enough with my kids. No matter what, they're seeing it and they're seeing my challenges, and I'm pretty open with it. But that's one of the things we owe our children, is to say, no, it's okay to be different. And I feel like that is preached in some ways, but not always.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
that's my thing. It needs mm-hmm. to be across the board to be accepting of others, no matter what, and to be able to have a nice conversation. No attacking, no yelling, no anger. We have a long way to go, but this is where it starts. It starts at home.
Well, and another thing that I like that you just said that I think is very important for parents who are struggling with, you know, where is the fine line? I love the fact that you are engaging your teens in, most of them, two of them, I guess, are teens, that you're engaging them in the fact that there is a battle before you, that you're not just showing them all the wonderful things of, you know, mom on TV and mom hosting this show and mom doing this. That is wonderful. But also you're allowing them to see the battles, the things that you find worthy to stand for. And that's equipping them. That's showing them, that's mentoring. That's walking two steps in front of them, showing them how it's done. And that's what I want my life to be about, to Sage and this nonprofit that I am. I want people to understand, you know, that we have to charge forward. We have to, for the sake of not only ourselves, but for the next generation, there's a remnant of really good people. There's a lot of really good people. You just don't hear about them as much. We need to come together in one voice and really take a stand and raise up our next generation and let them see that it can be hard work, but gosh, it's so worth it in the end. To be able to lay down at night and sleep and go, yeah, you know, I took one step forward in making a difference. And whatever it is, there's no better feeling to me in the world. So
I agree.
I love that.
And
we've
got to bottle those up.
Yes, absolutely. And I know your kids, and I know the strength of character and the confidence that you're putting into them. So let's talk about them. Gosh, oh my gosh, you know what time it is? It's time for a 30-second break. I told you this hour is going to go by fast. We're going to wish we had about 3 hours. But let's just take a little break here, Sage, and when we come back, we're going to switch over. We have just, we didn't even really hit your professional side of Sage, but we're going to move on over and to the personal side of you and some of the things about being a wife and a mom and sister and sister-in-law, all those many roles that you fulfill and do it so well. So in 30 seconds, we'll be right back with Sage Steele.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone who
had to be independent and take initiative, and that's how I handle every project I get.
Discover new ways to develop great talent at gradsoflife.org, brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
Well, welcome back to Coffee with Kim. Oh, my gosh, we're so delighted to have Sage Steele with us today. Before we get back to Sage, I'd like to let you once again know that Coffee with Kim is an entirely listener-supported radio. If you'd like to invest in our program, it's as easy as texting 410-376-5855 and type in radio. Thank you so much for your support. To find out more about our ministry, you can go to www.rosesandrainbows.org. We are now in the process of planning our 2019 National Birds of Blessing Tour. Oh, my gosh, we're going to be going all across the nation. If you would like for us to help you bring this into your area, We would love to hear from you. You can email Karen at rosesandrainbows.org. And finally, I'll remind you to tune in to NRB TV on Tuesday mornings at 9 o'clock or Wednesday mornings at 11:30 Eastern Time as our new Bible study series, Perfectly Imperfect, is being aired. So with all that being said, let's get back to what really matters, and that is hearing more from our friend and the incredible Sage Steele, who we just love so much, who stays so busy in her professional life, rarely gets to talk about the Sage that she strives to be, the most incredible personal in her personal relationships as wife and as mom and as sister and sister-in-law. And I mean, there's so many hats there. Sage, let's start with your sweet kids. And I know that's your soft place right there. So tell us about those kids. And I know even with that, there's something that you're continuously confronting as the professional woman that you are. So let's talk about that just a little bit.
They are, the loves of my life, right? What kids aren't once a woman becomes a mother. But they are, Evan, my youngest daughter, is 12. And I say I have three teenagers, even though she's not a teenager yet, because she is, 12 going on 42. And the resident comedian and the firecracker and just the stuff that comes out of her mouth, you know, we're trying to discipline her and you just have to turn away. And I'm like, oh gosh, I cannot let her see me laughing, or I cannot let her realize that I don't have a response for that. She just got me. She's that one. So Evan is 12 and hates that I gave her a name that she thinks is a boy name. But listen, I hated the name Sage too for a long time. And now I like it. I was like, trust me, you'll like it someday. Too bad. Nicholas,
I love the story of how you were named Sage.
It's not a sexy story, though. It's not as good of a story as anybody thinks. So I'm going to leave that one alone. My Nicholas is in the middle of these two girls. He's 14. He's a freshman. Every child has such different personalities, it seems, in most houses, and ours is no exception. And he's just a happy-go-lucky, sweet kid who is, it's funny. This last year, it's been tough. We moved cross country again 3 years after we did it. We were in Connecticut for 7 years here at ESPN beginning in 2007. And then my job duties took me out to Los Angeles, decided to move to Scottsdale, Arizona, closer to LA without being in LA. And I would just fly in a couple days a week. And it was great. And we were like, okay, we're done with the East Coast, done with the winters, we're done. And 3 years later, here we are back. So we've been back a year, and so it's just been a tough year. And he has noticed a lot, of course, and been through a lot. And one day, a couple of months ago, it was just a rough night. And he's just very observant when you don't know that he's being observant. And he just came by, and he walked by me, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and he just smiled, and he goes, "It's all right, Mom, we'll get through it." And I didn't even know he was listening to the conversation, which was, girl drama. I have two girls, basically. And he just puts his hand on my shoulder, and then he'll come by and he'll rub my shoulder and he'll say, "I love you," and just keep walking. So he's that kid, that little boy who's not little anymore, and is a freshman and is, becoming a young man. And it freaks me out because he was always just my little guy. And then Quinn, my oldest, my first, she's 16 and is just a heart of gold. But all three of them have hearts of gold, and it just comes out differently, and it's fascinating to watch. She's really found herself recently after a tough move, moving across the country as a 15-year-old girl, a sophomore, and all that comes with being a 15-year-old girl, which isn't all fun these days. And she has really found herself the past few months, and I'm so proud of her for taking on a couple of challenges and being her best self, as cheesy as that sounds. But man, it's been a blessing the last few months to see her kind of get back to who she was, who she is. It never left, but kids always go through tough times, and this move proved to be especially difficult on her. So they're awesome, and I feel pretty blessed to be their mom.
I know, and I know that as we had talked before the show, you said that one of the issues that you confront and you continue to confront every day is this role at home, and being all that you want to be at home and the role at work. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I you know, that whole mom guilt thing, it's real. So as much as I've let go of things at work and professionally and also personally, maybe with even friendships, as far as, you know, you just can't please everybody, you got to let go, you got to move on. Well, I can't let go of that at home, and especially with these kids who depend on us for everything. But my husband is a saint, and he, you know, the Cliff Notes version of it is that we had Quinn when we were in Washington, D.C. in 2002. And, you know, we had this whole grand plan of, okay, we'll just get, you know, put her in a nice daycare center and or get a nanny. Maybe we can share because we really couldn't afford too much. And that was the plan because my husband was working a good job down in Georgetown in D.C. And then I gave birth. And then we held her. Mm-hmm. And then we went, oh, crap, we can't just hand her off to somebody. And so basically we crunched the numbers and realized that we could probably barely afford to get by on one salary. The not issue, but the deal was that it was my salary because I was making a little bit more money at the time than he was. But more importantly, it was about future earning potential. And so that's what we based the decision on. And ultimately, it was certainly his decision. I always say Jonathan's the smartest person I know, the most well-read person I know, and he's the one with a couple of, you know, 2 degrees, and here's me barely getting out of college. I think they kicked me out after 5 years just to get rid of me. They didn't even want my money anymore.
You know,
like,
better
no,
than
no, no,
that.
It's true. You just get her out, and that's fine. I own it. Can't be good at everything. But he decided to stay home, and that was 16 and a half years ago. Mm. Not the plan. One of those things. It was not the plan. It was temporary. It was to get us through, and it was because I had a demanding job, and we just didn't. Most importantly, we didn't want other people raising our kids, so it was really difficult financially. So we had a tiny house and 2 crappy cars, and we never went out to dinner, and we never took vacations. We never did anything nice because we couldn't. But those nights, and so one of us was always there, and that was crucial. For us, I think that's one of the things we're most proud of is that the sacrifice at the beginning that has just – it continues to pay dividends. Mm. But with that came – you know, I went back to work when she was 8 weeks old on the day she turned 8 weeks. And I went back – I was covering the Baltimore Ravens at the time, and it was during, you know, NFL training camps. And if I wanted to cover the team that year, that season, I had to be at training camp from day one. So I went from, you know – trying to recover from having a baby to 14, 16-hour work days out at training camp up in Westminster, Maryland, and, you know, pumping every couple of hours and the mom guilt. And then I experienced some postpartum issues for sure, especially with number two, with Nicholas. So I have always been so graciously thankful to my husband for his decision to do this, and he has owned it beautifully. But I have been so envious so many times and guilt-ridden because I was the only mother that wasn't on the field trip or at the dance recital when, you know, dads can't go backstage and get their daughters ready. It has to be the mom. And my girls were the only ones who didn't have their mom back there because I was covering the NBA out in Los Angeles. I still struggle. You know, my daughter had a horse show last week on a Wednesday. My show's at 6 p.m. Eastern time. I work 12 to 8. I can't get out of my show. She had a show the other day. I was covering the New York City Marathon, and so I missed that. I missed swim meets. I missed cross-country meets. I've missed so much. That kills me. So that's where I need to improve, is to continue to not beat myself up for it. You'd think after 16 years I'd be better, and I am better because it's not like I'm out getting manicures or shopping. You can tell from my nails. I'm not doing fun things. I'm working. And when I do work and when I'm on the road, I do try to enjoy it and have fun because otherwise I'm not going to have anything. I'm just going to sit there and feel guilt. So I still struggle, but my husband's been terribly supportive this whole time and tells me not to worry and tries to make it great when I'm home and when I'm not home. But a mother is a mother, and there's no one that can fully replace us for obvious reasons. I do think it's different for stay-at-home mothers versus stay-at-home dads and working mothers, certainly, versus working dads. And I still get emotional about it, but I'm doing my best, and I hope that, you know, not the awesome thing is they get to see that gender roles really shouldn't matter or shouldn't exist because any man can be just as loving, I think, in most cases, as a woman, as a mother. And they can do laundry and cook and be that, you know, the soccer parents and the swim taxi, just like any woman can. So my kids know that it doesn't matter who does what as long as we're doing it. But, gosh darn it, I am so envious sometimes that it's not been me. And I can't change that.
I know. I mean, I don't know because haven't lived the life that you have. But I will tell you one thing. I know your kids, and I've had lots of conversations with Quinn and Evan and Nicholas, but especially Quinn, but how proud they are of you, and you know that. I know that you miss that, but gosh, they are so proud of you. And you are, even though you can't be there at everything that you are, that they have going on, you insert yourself in so many ways by sending the cookies and doing things. You have found your way to be there, even if you can't be there physically. And that's one of the things that amazed me, that I would see you come in, what few times I've been in your home, I see you standing there exhausted, baking banana bread from scratch and making cookies. I mean, you're always saying, sometimes I don't even know how you do it all. But let me just tell you, we have a caller that wants to come in and speak to you real quick. Let's see what this caller has to say. Caller 5076, caller 5076, welcome to Coffee. Please tell us who you are. Introduce yourself.
It's sister-in-law, Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
Yay. Well, I feel like I'm just talking to Sage on the phone. Listening to the radio show makes me feel like I'm just talking to her like our normal girl night. Sage, I wanted to say that I'm always so proud of you, and I love, love, love. I'm the best sister-in-law. I'm so honored to have adopted the Steele family after marrying her younger brother. I know he's more of a pain in the butt than not, but Sage is, I mean, we have had so many tears and laughs. We always share the same, you know, mom guilt and stories, and she and I are a lot alike in the sense of wanting to do everything and be everything for everybody and at what cost. You know, I'm always worried about Sage. With Kim, like you said, I mean, you know, Sage hardly ever sleeps and is on the road, but does everything for her kids. And yeah, we'll stay up until, you know, odd hours of the night baking cupcakes for, you know, the kids' class. I'm like, just go buy some cupcakes. So I know that's how she is. I know that's how she's wired, but that is also what's made her so successful. I mean, what I love about Paige is that she is as humble as can be. You never know you know, the world literally watches her on ESPN. And so we're so proud. I know her brother is so proud of her. I mean, it really, goodness prevails. I mean,
hey, like Wendy. Wendy,
yes.
Wendy, take just a minute. We're so quickly running out of time here, but take 30 or 60 seconds and share with our audience something about Sage that they wouldn't know about her as the sister-in-law and the sweet friend. Yeah, I mean, we've
had
so many long talks.
Wendy's a producer, too, so 30 seconds, Wendy.
30 seconds, Wendy.
I don't know about her, but I'd say the whole reason why Chad and I live in Baltimore is because of Sage and having babies. Chad was working for the 49ers at the time, and Sage was pregnant with Quinn, covering the Ravens. And there was a Ravens job that opened up. And so Chad said, I don't want to be the one to your uncle. And so he took the job at the Ravens to be near Sage and the kids. And, you know, now we blame her when we're depressed in the winter months. That we're in Baltimore, sucking you from California. But I know that's not totally your answer, but I know there's other people that want to call in. So,
that is something that I'll never forget when Chad did that, and I didn't realize it at the time. That was that was such a life changer for us to have my brother nearby after, you know, college and moving all over the place. We reconnected. And that's because family is really truly first for us. My parents instilled that in us, and Wendy's parents did the same thing. That's why we all work. And when she came into the family, it's like, thank God, I finally have a sister and we're on the same page with everything. But we share the same struggles and Wendy working. And I think that's the thing. There's just so many people out there who are trying to do it all. And I have quit using the word balance. Wendy would be proud of me because there's balance makes it sound like it's equal and it's perfect. And it's just not. So letting go and accepting and just doing our best. And you know, I'm crying as I listen to some of this, Wendy, and from you, Miss Kim, because you guys do know me. And I got up again. I got about 4 hours of sleep, and I got up again to make pancakes this morning from scratch because was gone all weekend. So I'm still not cured from this disease of trying to be kind of perfect at home. But you know, every day you just try to get a little bit better and be a little more forgiving of yourself. And I think we're all still a work in progress.
And I think that's the greatest thing that maybe our listeners can say, can hear, is that, you know, you do what you can and then you let it go, because otherwise you're living under such guilt and condemnation that you're not able to really enjoy the moment. And, you know, Sage, I see you doing that during the 4th of July and different things. But, Wendy, I know I'm going to let you go now, but one thing I want to say, Wendy, before you hang up is, I just want to thank you for bringing Sage in, first for meeting you and our friendship, of course, but for bringing Sage into my life. I will tell you, Sage, you have a sister-in-law who absolutely adores you, worries about you, will call me and say, Miss Kim, we got to pray for Sage, or let's take Sage away for the weekend, whatever. And I just see you two. We could do a whole show on just relationships between families and how you all have come together as such incredible sisters. I love you both. We have another caller. So, Wendy, thank you for calling.
Love you, Wendy.
Okay, I'm off. Love you guys. Okay,
love you. There's nothing, to me, Sage, and I know that this is the core of who you are, but to me, there is a loyalty that runs through my blood, that runs through yours, that once you call someone a friend, you will die for them. That's important, and I see that in you, and that's one thing that I don't people can't see that in you because of they don't know you that well, and I just love that about you so much. And Wendy, let me ask you really quickly, how did you, and we're down to, I can't believe we're down to 10 minutes, but Sage, if I were to ask you, who gave you this drive? Who is it that instilled in you to be your best? That Who would you attribute that to?
It is plain and simple, Gary and Mona Steele, my parents, thank goodness long-distance telephone calls don't cost anymore. Back in the day they did, and the money they spent trying to, you know, just pull me out of holes, deep, dark holes, and you know, not too deep and dark, but just fears as my, you know, career was unfolding and wanting to quit and being so hurt by so many things and just overall scared. My parents have continued to push me and just, you know, again, one time in particular where our boss had said some things and it was awful. I was in my 20s and my parents were angry and upset and hurt as any parent would be for their kids, especially when a, you know, grown man, 55, 6-year-old man says some kind of hateful things when he's supposed to be your boss and your leader. And they were upset for a minute. And then I remember they both said, okay, fine. Now what? Let him ruin your dream of getting to ESPN. Because if so, then just quit now. Or are you going to say, okay, tuck that one away, remember it for later. And if you let him win, that's your fault. So it was tough love, but they were so right. And what they did is they took this scared kid, 25, 26 years old, scared to death, and empowered me to stand up for myself and my dream. Because they said, listen, if you – you know, we all have regrets as adults. Maybe we could have, would have tried something differently when we were younger. My mom would say, Sage, there's a couple things that I regret not trying. She goes, even if you fall on your face and fail, at least you've done it and you've tried. And so they helped me by sharing their quote-unquote failures. And they wouldn't let me do some of those same things, and I'm forever grateful.
Oh, Sage, you know what? I knew that about you. And you know what? And their love and their continued support, I think, even as adult, keeps our parents just keep us keeping on. And with no further ado, we have another caller, 5572. Caller, would you come on and introduce yourself to Sage?
Hi, ladies.
Hello. Hello. Hello, Sage. How are you? Kim.
I know those voices.
Sage, Sage, it's your mom
morning,
and dad.
Ladies.
Hey.
Well, we didn't know Sage, you'd have the whole family on today, Kim.
Well, Wendy, I told her to call in, and I'm so glad that she did. But, you know, Sage, one of the greatest things that that I feel like that God has given me to do is to honor people that I love and admire so much. I'm going to try to get through this without crying, but I just adore you and who you are and who you strive to be every day. And it is just such a pleasure for me to now give the next few minutes over to your mom and dad to just honor you for the daughter that they love so much. So, Colonel Mona, what would you like to say to your daughter?
Well, this is Gary, and gosh, what can I say? Sage, you have been the epitome of first child, the epitome of daughter. You have shown us by your example the way to be a wife, a mother, a friend, a daughter. You're the best.
And, you know, the thing is that we all have guilt. We all have that mother guilt, especially those of us who I know worked. But when you see how your child parents, then you know you've done a good job. You know you've done a really good job. So, you know, Sage, you've done a wonderful, wonderful job. And just we were there a couple of weeks ago, Kim, and just got to be around the kids. And it was so much fun. And they are blossoming. So, you know, I'm so proud of you for that. And I do have to tell you, last night, I did like your shoes a lot.
So did I, Sage.
Oh, the Mickey Mouse thing. Thank you. Well, and the drama that went into that is hysterical. But see, so Miss Kim, my mother will always come around with the humor when she knows everybody's
yes.
mess and crying or,
yes.
or something. So she's
yes.
a comedian. But
yes.
But that was always my goal was to try to be like they were to me. So I'm not there yet. I'm still trying to figure it out. But
certainly are. But this is what, you know, and this is just what being a parent is. And there are those times where we doubt ourselves, and then you pick yourself up. And Kim, you know, you're watching your kids do the same thing
yes.
Getting married and being supportive and then having children. And, you know, it's like I said, it's just so wonderful to watch your kid's parent.
And I look at you, Sage. I look at what you and John are doing, and as I see you, I say, oh my gosh, I wish I'd done that when I was parenting. You know, you've got it. You've got it, girl.
Oh, thanks a lot for this, Miss Kim. Goodness.
Kim, you know this family is way too emotional. You know that.
I know, and that's why I love you. So for our listeners, you probably don't know that as he introduced himself as Gary, this is the Colonel Steele that has been on our show a couple of times that you've heard, and his lovely wife, Mona, who I'm so delighted that I do not know, Colonel, how you were able to get her on the way. Only Sage could get her on a radio program. That I know.
Sure.
So
That's for sure.
And I just thank you so much. Sage, sweet girl, do you have a response? I know you're just crying. But I was thinking today, I mean, what a great way, because I do know that you are all over the place, but yet you have so much time at home and with those kids, and you make the most of it. All of us need
yeah.
every once in a while someone that we love that says you're doing it right. I see you trying. You know, disregard what other people are saying. Stay focused. And I was thinking this morning, there would be no one better than your family. Thank you, Wendy, for calling in. But I know with your parents, that is the epitome of those that you call your heroes. So I'm so excited that it worked out that they could call in.
Well, it's funny because there's just been so many ups and downs, and funny because I think when I'm at work and when I'm doing anything, you know, publicly, I have to be a certain way, and that way is genuine. I mean, I'm genuinely me, but I almost feel like I have a split personality where it's the work side, and I have to be so strong and tough and stand up and professional and not perfect, but just I'm on. I have to be on, and I have to I'm constantly defending myself and standing up and trying to do it the right way, and it's exhausting. And so then, when you have someone that you can pick up the phone at all hours of the day and night, because I live all hours, and I know that they're not going to judge, and they're going to support me and cheer me up and call me on some of my stuff and challenge me and talk me off the ledge and congratulate me and, you know, all of those things that there's just so few people in your life that you can depend on that for. Not everybody has, you know, two strong, loving parents, and that's why I am where I am today, 100%. So I'm just thankful. I love you guys.
Love you.
Aww. Love you too, babe.
Well, I cannot still thank you so much for calling in, and please, when you get to Baltimore, you know my address. I'd love to see you. Unfortunately, we only have a minute left. Please stay on, Steels. I'm going to throw this to Sage in the midst of her tears. But Sage, imagine that there's someone out there that's walking the hallways of life kind of the way you were, and they just don't even know if they can keep on keeping on. Could you take about 30 seconds and just speak a word of hope into them like your parents and Miss Cam spoke into you, sweet lady?
I just would hope and pray that, you know, block out the naysayers, block out all those fears that you have. Just know that my mom says it all the time. Everybody's got something that they're dealing with, and maybe you don't know what it is. I've got a lot of somethings. However, through the strength of my parents and my family and my friends, I have been able to push through those fears. And I say quite often, what if I hadn't? What if I had listened to those people in high school, listened to those bad bosses, listened to people on social media who think I don't deserve a job or should die, frankly, or whatever? What if I would have so many regrets, and even if I had fallen on my face, which I have on national TV, you got to get back up. And if you don't, you'll always regret it. So please don't give up. Keep trying. Not even for everybody else in your life. Do it for you. So then later, when you're talking to your kids or your grandkids or when you're long gone, you can say, you know what, they were tough and they never gave up. But most importantly, you can do it and you can still be true to who you are. And I think that's the most important thing. Don't forget where you came from, no matter how successful you get. And I believe that you'll be okay. But don't have those regrets. Always try. Challenge yourself. Live for today. Live for tomorrow. If you don't, you'll regret it. But you can do it by being who you are, true, genuine, and most importantly, kind.
Oh, this has been such an incredible honor to have the Steels on. I can't thank you enough. And I will look forward to seeing you all in person. And to my listeners, I hope that you've enjoyed today's show. If you would like to hear it again, it is going to be in podcast soon. So just go to Up To Me Radio, and you'll be able to get that within about 30 minutes. So listen to it over and over and over again. I will conclude today's show with the Bible verse of Galatians 6:9, where it tells us, "Let us not grow weary in well-doing and doing what is good and what is right. For in due time, we will reap the harvest if we do not give up." Sage Steele, I adore you, and I hope to see you soon. Love you all, everybody.
See
you next week.
Thank you for what you're doing for so many people. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Bye, everybody. See you next week on Coffee with Kim.
To learn more about Kim's books, teaching materials, or to invite Kim to speak at your event, please visit kimcrable.com. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, to learn more, please visit kimcrable.com.